Today on Maine Calling, the year ahead in Maine politics. The primary election isn't till June, and of course the general election November, but the 2026 campaigns are in full swing and attracting national attention. Maine will elect a new governor this year. Several Democrats are vying with each other to challenge U.S. Senator Susan Collins. The 2nd District congressional race is wide open since Jared Golden announced he will not run again. Incumbent Congresswoman Shelley Pingree faces a Democratic challenger in the 1st District primary, and voters will decide every member of the Maine legislature. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we check in with journalists whose job it is to keep track and dig in to what this election means for Maine and the nation. What do you expect this election year? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and offering custom homes in Quarry Cottages, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And by Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. 2026 is shaping up to be a momentous year in Maine politics, both at the national level and state level. Today, we are going to preview the races that you will be no doubt hearing about a lot this year. We're going to discuss some of the top political issues facing the state. My guests are Susan Cover, who is State House reporter and State House reporter and multimedia content producer with Spectrum News, Steve Missler, who is chief political correspondent with Maine Public, and Kevin Miller, Maine Public's State House correspondent. We invite you to join the conversation. Which races matter most to you? Which issues matter most to you? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Welcome back to all of you, and you've got quite a year ahead. Steve, I'll start with you. This time next year, Maine's political leadership will, we know, look different. It could look very different. We've got wide open races for governor, wide open races for the 2nd Congressional District. Susan Collins is considered vulnerable by most prognosticators, and the entire legislature's on the ballot. So I know we always say, oh, it's a big year, but this is a big year.
It's a huge year. I mean, just the number, just all you need to do is look at the sheer volume of candidates, right? There's more than 20 people running for governor alone. And some of those folks are already hold positions in state government. There's Shenna Bellows, the Secretary of State, she's running for governor. There's former Maine Senate President Troy Jackson, another Democrat, running for governor. There's current legislators running for governor. I'm thinking of maybe State Senator James Libby, a Republican from Standish. He's also running. So is Rick Bennett. He's running as an independent, and he is a state senator from Oxford. He's also the former chairman of the Maine Republican Party. So he's making a switch there to make his campaign for the Blaine House. And so there's just a lot. And of course, the U.S. Senate race is just going to be a massive contest. It's already well underway. The primary campaign is very active. And so is the outside spending from groups that can spend unlimited amounts of money. That's already begun to try to shape that and influence voters next year or this year.
Kevin, are there any sort of themes emerging? Do you see any trends in what the candidates for, especially for the big offices, are talking about or not talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely seeing some of the same themes being talked about here in Maine, like we're seeing nationally. Affordability is obviously going to be a big issue, both in the governor's race, but also I think in some of the congressional races. In the congressional races, I think as in years past, in some ways, there's a perception that it's going to be a referendum on the Trump presidency, just like as it was with the Biden presidency. So I think you're going to see a lot of debate over whether Susan Collins, how closely aligned she is with President Trump, or how much she distances herself from President Trump. That's certainly something we're going to hear a lot from when it comes to Janet Mills and Graham Blattner, who are running against Collins, running for the Democratic ticket. In the governor's race, it depends on your party. Like right now, all the Republican candidates are really talking about taxes, affordability, energy prices, you know, what they consider to be the overreach of the Mills administration. On the Democratic side, you're hearing a lot of talk about energy prices and making things more affordable, but also kind of making sure that Maine is protecting some of those key issues for Democrats, like healthcare access and things like that.
Susan, on the national level, we hear a lot about the battle for the heart and soul of each party, the battle for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but especially the Democrats. Are we hearing that here in Maine as well?
Yeah, I think you're definitely seeing that play out in the Mills versus Blattner campaign. They're running very different messaging. Certainly Graham Blattner has, pitched himself as the next generation of leaders, much more aggressive, much more progressive. He's drawing contrasts with Susan Collins constantly. Governor Mills, I think, is relying more on her experience, her name recognition, and the fact that she did stand up to Donald Trump and has continued to do so. So there is definitely a battle within the Democratic Party for who's going to emerge from that and then, go on to take on Senator Collins in the fall.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit more about this Senate race. Steve, this is really getting a lot of a national attention. And one thing that's interesting to me is how much attention Graham Blattner is getting. I mean, he hasn't won a primary yet, and until recently was unknown to even political reporters in Maine. But recently, an article in the New York Times, an article in Roll Call, Cook Political Report, the New Yorker, David Remnick's editor, did a video interview with him. Why?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think, first of all, I think one thing that's one of the reasons, one of the explanations perhaps, is that he's a very charismatic personality. But more than that is, I think, that he's channeling something that's going on in the Democratic Party writ large, which is basically a sense of disenchantment among Democrats, registered Democrats. There's been polls over the last year just showing how registered Democrats just think the party is weak and ineffectual. And a lot of that is because of the election of President Trump last year or in 2024. And I think there's just a lot of people who just think the Democratic Party has lost its way, or it's not pitching a winning message to the rest of the electorate. And I think Graham Blattner, when he introduced himself as a Democratic Senate candidate back in August, he went right after that and tapped into that vein of anger and disillusionment by talking about not just the flaws of the Republican Party or President Trump or Republicans in Congress, but the flaws of the Democratic Party, which he held responsible for the current plight of the country as anybody else. And so I think that seemed to resonate with a lot of voters in this state, or at least Democratic voters, who, went to all the, he had this town hall tour that numbered, I think, almost 30 town halls. And I covered several of those, or attended several of those for larger stories. And they were packed, every single one of them, as far away as Caribou, Farmington. Of course, down on the coast, he was drawing huge crowds. He drew, it was 1,500 people in the pouring rain back in September in Portland. And so I think that just speaks to, that he's, at least on that issue, on just in terms of criticizing the Democratic Party and other issues, affordability and the power of moneyed interest in Washington, I think he's really tapped a nerve. And so that's one of the reasons why he's done as well as he has, despite never holding an elected office above, I think, harbor master and planning board in the town of Sullivan.
And I want to correct myself about the national media outlets. It was The New Yorker, Axios, Politico and The Conversation. So I named some of the wrong media outlets, but it is true that national media outlets have been focusing on him. Kevin, is Susan Collins as vulnerable as the national pundits seem to think she is?
Well, I think she definitely is. I guess there's always this perception, or at least past couple elections, that at least in 2020 and now this year, that she is vulnerable. We saw in 2020 that the Democrats spent a huge amount of money on it, and everybody thought she was vulnerable. And then she won by what, like 9 percentage points. So, you know, there's the question of how vulnerable she is. I think this time around, everybody agrees, and certainly I think the Collins campaign is acting like, you know, that they. That she is vulnerable. We're seeing huge amounts of money going into both the campaigns for the candidates, but also some of these outside organizations and PACs that Steve mentioned. And that's another indication. I mean, campaign spending is not everything. You can't it doesn't decide who wins an election. We tend to kind of overinflate the influence sometimes, especially here in Maine. But it is an indication of what the national groups, how they perceive the race. And when you're seeing huge sums of money go into the race this early, it's certainly an indication that she is perceived as vulnerable. And I think just the fact that President Trump is intensely unpopular among a large segment of the Maine population. The Republicans seem to be standing by him at this point, but certainly Democrats, independents don't seem to support him. So that's going to be a vulnerability for Collins.
Steve.
Yeah, I just want to just add something to what Kevin was talking about, and it's just about how whether Collins is vulnerable or not. Like back in 2020, there was polling, there was a lot of speculation about that she would be vulnerable then, because also Trump was president and he was unpopular at the time. It was during the COVID pandemic, and you know it turned out that she was able to persuade a lot of swing voters in this state. And I think the winning argument that she made in that race was that she was ascendant on the Senate Appropriations Committee, which controls a lot of spending. And she was able to make this case, I think, to independents and swing voters that her seniority, her experience were things that benefited the state in a way that benefited the state financially. That's in question right now, even though she is the chair person of the Senate Appropriations Committee. The Trump administration has taken deliberate and very public steps to wrest more spending control from Congress. And by doing that, without much blowback from Republican senators, they've diminished the role of that Appropriations Committee. So, and that means, you know, the Democrats are making the argument that Susan Collins's role is diminished as a result of that. So I think Democrats are going to home in on that during the campaign this year. They're going to focus on the fact that, you know, she ran as this person who's going to bring home the bacon to the state of Maine. Yet there's been funding cuts. There's been all kinds of things that the Trump administration has done and exerted its influence over Congress. And she hasn't been able to do anything to stop that. I think it's going to be a key part of the Democrats' message, whoever the winner of the primary happens to be.
Sue, I wanted to ask you about the whole idea of how much money is being raised and how it will be spent. I mean, you can only buy so many ads on TV. You can only send so many canvassers out. Where will all this money go? All this money that's even above and beyond what was spent before?
Well, it's interesting because we've referenced the 2020 race with Sarah Gideon and Susan Collins, and that was at the time the most expensive race, somewhere north of $200 million spent by the campaigns and groups that are affiliated and unaffiliated with both campaigns. And in fact, Sarah Gideon walked away with $15 million extra dollars that she couldn't even spend. Advertising's relatively cheap in Maine. I'm sure we're going to be flooded with television ads. Certainly, probably not too much before June, but definitely heading into November. And I think, I'm seeing a lot of national staffers, come in too to help run these campaigns. So those folks cost money and they bring their expertise to the landscape. So again, like we've said, though, you can be extremely well funded and not win a race. And, kind of at the governor's level, even we see some folks, like Governor LePage, the first time he won, didn't really have that much money. And so, it'd be interesting to see if we can prop up folks who might not be that well known yet. But, you need money to a certain extent to be competitive, but you don't need billions and billions of dollars.
Well, Sue, let's stick with the governor's race because we're talking about 20 candidates. I didn't even count how many of them are Democrats. Steve was naming some of the big names. What can the candidates do to distinguish themselves from one another? What are they doing?
Well, so far we've seen on the Democratic side a couple of people roll out actual policy positions. Troy Jackson put out something he called a contract with working Mainers, talking about tax cuts, reducing, pharmacy drug costs. Hannah Pingree put out a housing plan saying she wants to spend $100 million a year on housing right off the bat, coming right out of the state budget. On the Republican side, I think we're seeing an effort for folks to get their name out. There aren't a lot of well-known candidates on that side. So we saw Jonathan Bush, say he's got $1 million now. He's very much focused on the Department of Health and Human Services, cutting back there, bringing spending more in line to what he and I think a lot of Republicans would like to see coming out of state welfare services. So it's a huge field. There's a lot of messaging that needs to take place, particularly on the Republican side, so folks know more about where everybody stands.
Well, let's talk about that money, because it was interesting to me, Kevin, that both Jonathan Bush and Nirav Shah sent out press releases that I saw this week. I'm sure you all get even more talking about how much money they've raised. Does that really indicate anything at this point?
Well, it's important to raise money if you're running a campaign, especially if you want to run a statewide campaign. So it's important to kind of show right out of the gate that you have support from donors. So I think that's definitely important. I think one thing that's important to note, we haven't seen all the fundraising reports for everybody else, because actually the deadline is not until January 15th. So we're starting to see them come out. So we saw, Dr. Shaw, we saw Jonathan Bush, we saw Hannah Pingree, and a few others have come out with some significant numbers. But it's also important to note that because we don't have the full reports, we don't know how much they're spending. We don't know how much they have on hand. So, if you raise a lot of money, but you're spending it as much as fast as it's coming in, that's important to bring out as well.
All right. And Steve, I want to ask you about polls. I think the most recent poll showed that Nirav Shah is the leader, but you say at this point, do not pay attention to polls.
Well, I just think they're really volatile. And, I think, you can look at each one. And the one with Nirav Shah leading was interesting because it had such a very small sample size of registered Democrats or Democrats who said they were going to be voting in the primary. And when you have a very small sample size, it's really hard to draw any definitive conclusions from that because the margin of error is so large. And then there's just fundamental problems with polling anyway right now, because response rates, and this is nationwide, response rates are really down. And that's because people have ways of screening calls now with their cell phones. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I get a call from a number I don't recognize, I'm blocking that thing and hanging up. And so I think a lot of other people probably do the same thing. And so it's just harder for pollsters to reach people, and the people that they do reach, they're self-selecting. So it's just, it may not be representative of the electorate writ large.
Well, we have to take a break, and we still haven't talked about the second congressional district race. We still haven't talked about the legislature. Lots to talk about here. What do you care about? You and the audience, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are discussing what promises to be a wild year in Maine politics. Joining me for the hour, Kevin Miller, who's Maine Public State House correspondent, Susan Cover, State House reporter and multimedia content producer with Spectrum News, and Steve Missler, chief political correspondent with Maine Public. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We will get to our audience calls and questions in just a little bit, but I do want to touch on the races for the House of Representatives and also for the state legislature. Kevin, the second congressional district race really changed when Jared Golden announced he was not going to run for re-election. We know that Matt Dunlap is in the race as a Democrat, but there are rumors that others who have a high profile will get into that. So let's start with the Democrats. What do you know? What do you expect?
Right. Yeah. So before Jared dropped out, this was already considered to be one of the top most competitive races in the country. It is election after election. Once he dropped out, this kind of threw it entirely wide open. So far, among the Democrats, we have Matt Dunlap, former Secretary of State and a state auditor. Jordan Wood, who's a Democrat from Bristol, he dropped out from the Senate race and moved over into the second district race. We also have Lewis Siegel, I think he's from Gardner, and a new person, Paige Lord, came in. The one name that we're expecting, based on some of the reporting, is Joe Baldacci. He's a state senator from Bangor, and he's the brother of former governor and former congressman John Baldacci. It sounds like he's going to get into the race, so that will certainly shake up the Democratic race even more.
And what about Troy Jackson? A lot of people thought that he might move from the governor's race to the second congressional district race. Do we know if he's going to, or has he said?
Well, Troy's been saying that he was flattered by the attention and that he's been considering it. But it sounds, all indications are right now, it looks like he's probably going to stay in the governor's race. That could change. There are some complications as far as fundraising, be able to transfer money when you're running for governor to a federal race. It's much easier for someone like Jordan Wood, who is already running in a federal race, to transfer his Senate money over to his House race. It's more complicated when you get to the governor's race. And what we heard from Joe Baldacci was that he would probably only get into the race if Troy Jackson doesn't. So that's kind of another indication that Troy might be staying put in the governor's race.
Steve, let's go to the Republican side. Two Republicans, one, former Governor Paula Page. Is it pretty much considered a given that Paula Page will win this primary or not so much?
He's certainly the front runner, Jen, just because by virtue of the fact he's two-time governor, his name ID in this state is, I'm sure there's not many people, unless they've moved here in the last, few years, that don't know who he is. And that alone, and plus his sort of affiliation, longtime affiliation with the main Republican Party and people who move and shake things over there, I think, it'd be hard-pressed to describe him as anything but the front runner in that GOP field. The other person is not really well known. I mean, it's interesting biography there, but Kevin has done a little bit of reporting and actually talked to him. But I think, Governor Paula Page is definitely the front runner. And, he may even be the front runner in the race, in the general election, not just not in the Republican primary to the extent that there is one. And so that's really interesting because, that is a seat that Democrats had hoped to hold with Jared Golden running for re-election. But now that's very much up in the air because, from some of the reporting we've seen from national outlets, their national Democrats have been trying to find a candidate that can take on LePage. Some are not apparently convinced that Matt Dunlap has got what it takes to do that. I mean, obviously Matt Dunlap has something to say about that. So I think the search has been on from the national Democrats to find a different kind of candidate. And of course that in and of itself is causing some friction here at home with local Democratic activists a lot of whom have backed Matt Dunlap and publicly and endorsed his candidacy. So, it's a very interesting sort of dynamic at play there on the Democratic side as well.
Well, Susan, unlike the U.S. Senate, in which U.S. senators are elected every 6 years, in Maine, every legislator, whether it's in the House or Senate, is elected or reelected every 2 years. That means that everything could change. As you look at the races for the Maine state legislature, are there races that stand out to you?
Well, I will say there are 186 of them, and the filing deadline is until March 15th. So a lot of these races aren't fully fleshed out yet. I think when you look at the results from 2 years ago, the Republicans came very close to taking the House, and they make a compelling case for feeling like they have a very good shot at doing that again this time around. I think the Senate would be a little bit more difficult for them. And when you look at leadership, Speaker Fecteau, if he were to win and the Democrats were to maintain power in the House, could serve another 3 terms as Speaker. Senator Daughtry, the Senate President, could serve another term. And for the Republicans, there would might be some turnover in Republican leadership in the House. Representative Billy Balkingham is termed out, although he is rumored to be running for the state Senate to replace Marianne Moore, a very popular Republican from down East Maine. So there definitely will be some shuffling around. Where everybody lands, of course, has yet to be known. And I always feel a little bit bad for the legislative races because often in these high-profile races, we all are stretched thin and don't focus quite as much on them as the kind of attention that they might otherwise get. And the state legislature is really important. It has a lot of direct impacts on people every day. So here's my pitch to people to do your research on folks that you might want to back for the legislature and whether you're happy with the direction of the state or not, make your voice heard.
All right. We'll go to some callers. We'll start with Jamie, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Well, hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, look, I'm one of the unenrolled voters that are going to be able to vote in this primary. And people sometimes they tell me I'm a little bit of a political junkie. I don't think so, because it's just chatting this up, the fact that unenrolled voters can vote in the primary. But so come to find out, I thought it was a little bit more freewheeling. And it turns out somebody told me that if you go in, you're going to be either handed a Republican or a Democratic ballot, that an unenrolled voter can't vote either way. And so to me, which is fine. That's just the rules if that's what it is. But the implications is that there's a tremendous down ballot or up ballot aspect to that. If you got a favorite candidate, and then all of a sudden you could sweep in many other votes that might not ever be seen, so to speak, for candidates down ballot. So just curious if that's the case. If you're unenrolled, do you get you can't cross over from one party to the other.
All right, Steve, this was a fairly recent change. So, why don't you explain Maine's semi-open primary? What is available to voters come June?
Right. So the way prior to this year, the way it worked before is that if you had to be a registered member of a party to vote in that party's primary election. So which usually takes place in June. And so if you're a registered Democrat and you can go vote in the Democratic primary and you would vote for that slate of candidates and rank them in this case because it's a ranked choice. Well, in the governor's race, it's a ranked choice. And if there are multiple candidates in the legislative races, that would be a ranked choice as well. But if you were an independent, you'd had no role to play in either primary because you're unenrolled, you're not part of the primary, that sort of thing. This year, that changes. So unenrolled voters can go and participate in one or the other party primaries, and you just get a Republican ballot if you want to vote on the Republican side, or you get a Democratic ballot if that's where you want to go. You can't do both. You can't vote in both primaries. You can only vote in one or the other. And so that's a new change. And I think it'll be really interesting to see, especially this year, right? Midterm election, how many unenrolled voters go to do that? This is a big experiment. And I think it'll be very telling, especially if let's say a lot of unenrolled voters flock to the Democratic primary. That might tell you where the energy is in the midterm election and in the general election later on. Or if a lot of them flock to the Republican side, that could tell you something too. So from a just from a measurement standpoint, it's interesting just to see how that would work. But the functionality of it is this: you can only want vote in one primary, and so that's the choice that independent or unenrolled voters will have in June if they choose to take it.
Jamie, thanks for your question. We'll go up to Lewiston and Paula. Hi, Paula, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Well, let's see. I've got a list here. First of all, I think any candidate that wants to win election in Maine should concentrate on oversight of many things. Department of Human Health and Human Services, because too many children are dying in Maine, and one of the reasons I believe it's happening is that protection orders are often granted without good reason, because people just want to keep certain people away from their kids for whatever reason. It's happening to me. I can't tell you who made the accusations, or I could be arrested again, okay? Let's see. So also, I didn't hear anybody mention the constitutional crisis in Maine that's happening. The state is failing to provide attorneys to people who are incarcerated or waiting for trial. And this is an ACLU lawsuit that was begun in 2022.
Sure, Paula. Yeah, we've done Maine Calling programs on that, and it is and Kevin, Paula is bringing up two very, very important issues facing Maine right now, and saying that these are what she's going to vote on, and this is what she wants to hear the candidates talk about.
Yep. Yeah, and certainly the DHHS child welfare issue is a issue that's always ripe, but it's, you know, especially in the past couple of years, we've seen some of these horrific acts, horrific incidents. It is an issue that we're going to get more attention from in the legislature. In fact, there's a bill up today for a public hearing that would create a standalone child welfare agency outside of DHHS. Some of the Republicans I know in the governor's race have been talking about this. It's also come up in some of the Democratic races. So that's definitely the challenge. Is there's not a partisan solution, I think, to this. It's something that Governor LePage and Governor Mills both have tried to address, and it's just a challenge. So that's, I wouldn't be surprised if that does come up for some candidates. And then the other issue, you know, certainly the public defender system. That's another issue that the legislature is going to have to grapple with this year. So it might come up in the election. And the, right now there's a big hole in that agency that's providing the defenders to indigent clients. So they're going to have to figure out how to plug that hole.
Susan, anything you'd like to add to address Paula's question?
Yeah, as far as indigent legal representation, this has been a problem for years. It's chronically underfunded. There is a new leader at the head of the Public Defense Agency, so maybe there'll be some more energy there to find some longer-term solutions so that, you know, folks who are incarcerated and are entitled by the Constitution to representation will finally get it.
Paula, thank you for your question. We'll move to Lloyd calling from Paris. Hi, Lloyd. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am definitely interested in the governor's race. One particular candidate, Rick Bennett, Rick is well known throughout the state, and is running as independent this election period for governor. I applaud him for doing that. I've known Rick for many, many years. I've known that he's always been affiliated with the Republican Party, and his past history in the House and the Senate. But I think his outlook of where Maine's heading because of party politics is not where the people of the state of Maine want to be. They want somebody who's going to be able to bring the parties put together and have an understanding of, you know, can work together and come to a ultimate agreement. And that's not happening, and it hasn't happened for quite some time. I personally served in the House in 2013 to 2017, and I had a total of 4 years, and I could see that there was, unfortunately, parties that weren't working together for various reasons. And I just think with Rick Bennett running and the state of Maine having an independent governor, there's an opportunity for a better working relationships in Augusta, and I think a majority
Lloyd,
of...
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for calling in. And we haven't talked about Rick Bennett yet. He will not be in the primaries because he is running as an independent. But Steve, he has experience working across the aisles. He and Mike Mishu shared the Senate presidency when they were both in the Maine State Senate because the numbers were evenly split. So what kind of factor is Rick Bennett in the governor's race, or is it really too early to say?
Well, I think he could have a big factor in the race because, you know, right now, as it stands, the governor's race in the general election is not a ranked choice election. And so if you have an independent who can gather a sizable critical mass of the electorate, and, you know, Lloyd just talked about some of the how a lot of people in Maine are unhappy with the two political parties. I think that there's a lot of people that share that view. And so as a result of that, somebody like Rick Bennett could actually, you know, could really catch fire if he's able to, you know, really capture their imaginations about being able to work with both parties and find some bipartisan solutions. So in that sense, you know, he could have a profound effect, and if not be, you know, potentially even win the thing if he's able to really, you know, gather a lot of support from both parties. And so I think, you know, he's in a good position to do that. It's just a matter of whether or not his campaign can gather the momentum and everything else. And it's tough for independents to do that right now, especially with competitive party primaries. They just get overshadowed by those other contests until June. And then after that, after the primary election, independent candidates tend to get a better look, not only from the electorate, but also the press, because they're now in the game, and now they're, you know, somebody to watch and to keep track of. So, you know, Rick Bennett could definitely be a factor in the governor's race. And I think, you know, like you said, he's also pretty good on the stump. Like if you listen to him talk, you know, he's somebody who he's very fiery orator. And so I think that works in his favor as well. So,
Kevin.
Yeah. And just building on what Steve said, I mean, if Senator Bennett does make it through to the general election and he's up there on a debate stage with a Democrat and a Republican, that will be an interesting, because he is a very skilled orator. I just note that there are actually four other independents that are currently filed to run for governor. Another one is Representative Ed Crockett from Portland. If they qualify for the ballot, that's going to potentially further dilute, you know, the votes that are going to the Democrats and Republicans. And again, I know this kind of common knowledge, but maybe not for all listeners out there, but we have had two independent governors in the past, and Elliot Cutler, who, you know, is now his reputation has been tarnished, obviously, by his other things that are going on in his life, but he came within 10,000 votes of winning in 2010. So, you know, to Steve's point, yeah, Rick Bennett or other independents can very much change this race.
Thank you, Lloyd, for your call. We're going to take another quick break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. What are you watching during this election year? 1-800-399-3566. Email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling, and we are talking with the Political Pulse team plus Susan Cover. All three are political reporters who are strapping on their seatbelts and getting ready for what is going to be quite a year in Maine politics. What are your questions? What are you thinking about as we start this year, 2026? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Susan, before the break, Lloyd was talking about how he believes the Maine voters are centrists, who want people who work across the aisle. I know that has been Maine's reputation for a long, long time. Is it still true?
I think it is, particularly with regard to the governor's race. I had a really interesting conversation last week with Jim Melcher, who's a political science professor at UMF. And he really made the case not only that Senator Bennett has a legitimate chance, but also that when people are looking for a chief executive to run the state, that they do want a centrist. They don't want anyone who's way too far to the left or way too far to the right. So they are looking for someone who can kind of bridge the gap and bring people together and get things done. I think there is a difference, though, in how people vote, maybe for the United States Senate or their local House or Senate race. But I think when we're talking about the governor's race, Janet Mills is a moderate. Some Republicans might disagree with that, but she is. And the one exception, I think, recently to that rule was Governor LePage, who did win two terms. Certainly not a moderate, but I think in general, when you look at our last 50 years of governors, they do tend to be more moderate than not.
Okay. We have an email here from Cody. Could you please ask your guests to go over what questions we may see on the state ballot this year? Is it time yet? Do we even know, Kevin?
Yeah, there are groups that are out there collecting signatures, and I don't believe any of them have qualified for the ballot yet. So we could see some. There is one big question out there about that would change Maine's marijuana legalization. It would kind of roll back the legality of recreational marijuana and shift anybody who's selling in the recreational market would they'd have to shift over to the medical marijuana side. And they would also start to impose tracking and testing on medical marijuana. This is a debate that kind of all of us at the State House have been hearing for years and years about medical marijuana and testing. This is a way to try to get that done through the ballot box. So that's one that's out there circulating.
Steve, I want to ask about the lens of what's gone on across the nation in some of the elections that have happened recently and if it means anything to Maine. I think a lot of people are making, we look at the New York City mayor's race and Soran Mamdani, who went to Bowdoin. We look at the Miami mayoral race in which a Democrat won for the first time in a long time. And there are some other big races around the country in which Democrats won in places that had gone for Donald Trump. Does that mean anything here in Maine?
It could. I mean, it certainly could. I think, and I think Democrats here are hoping that it does because the Democrats across the country, as you just pointed out, did fare well in special elections or off-year elections in other states back in November. And I think, the hope is that those performances combined with the president's unpopularity, because I think he's polling and it's like the low 40s, high 30s in terms of approval rating right now, that those two things will combine to produce a Democratic wave election, much like we had in 2018, 2 years after President Trump was president for the first time, and that was a Democratic wave election. Maybe not quite the wave that Democrats had hoped for in 2018. I think they're hoping for something much bigger than that, and that could certainly be the case. In Maine, especially, potentially in this U.S. Senate race and certain, maybe even the congressional contests if Democrats get lucky in the second congressional district. But I'm not sure how that translates into state house races, either for governor or the legislature. And part of that is because Democrats have been in control since 2019, full control. So they've had a trifecta here in state government since 2019. And so sometimes when that happens, there's fatigue with the direction of state government. And so perhaps, and I think Republicans are hoping and banking on this, that voters will want a change of some sort, and that will reflect itself in the state legislature or at least in the Blaine House. And that's what Republicans are hoping for. And so we'll have to see. But I do think, look, those other elections last year, those specials or those off-year elections do bode well for Democrats in 2026. And I think they're hoping to ride that because, especially given where the party was after the 2024 election, where they just seemed scattered. There was no real leader. There was no real message. People were questioning whether viable as a political party. The brand was in the toilet. So I think, Democrats are hoping that they can reverse all that this year.
We'll go to Marfine, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Marfine. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, a lot of Mainers are finally tuning in to the importance of county governments, which is another political arm here in the state that's underrated. But a lot of the counties are dealing with huge budget issues, especially rural counties. And I'm finally glad that Mainers are actually tuning in to this important part of our government. And just wondering your guests' thoughts on, you know, what that looks like in the year ahead.
Sue, I'll turn to you.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. Of course, Washington County has been kind of the unfortunate poster child in this department with their struggles and having to go to towns and say, you've got to pony up more money and we need it right now. We can't even wait until the normal cycles come around. I'll be interested to see if there's action at the state legislative level to take a more stronger role over county government. I mean, in general, county government in Maine is rather weak. You know, they run their local jails and do a few other services, but unlike in other states, they're not in charge of as many things as you might expect. So I'll be interested to see if, you know, the state legislature does try to take a stronger role in their governance.
Arfine, thanks for your call. Let's see, we'll go to South Portland and Phil. Hi, Phil, go ahead.
Hi there. I am interested in following the discussions in the legislature about the solemn occasion issue, which would, if it goes forward, would ask the Supreme Court to relook at its decision to deny the use of ranked choice voting in general elections in Maine. And this would have major implications for the governor's race in particular, and that for Rick Bennett and the, trying to end the duopoly of the two major parties. So I'm curious what.
Yeah, so that's just kind of to remind people. So we have ranked choice voting, but we have it for the in the primaries for pretty much all races, but we don't have it in the general election for the governor's race because the way the Constitution was interpreted during kind of as an advisory ruling by the state Supreme Court is that the Constitution says plurality for the governor's race. So there is a movement to try to get the court to relook at that. I think there was a bill in last session that I think is still alive. And the proponents of that bill are basically saying, no, they disagree with that interpretation. They want to push it forward. And if that did happen, then yes, it would potentially dramatically change the November election for governor, because right now that would not be a ranked choice election. So that's a debate,
Kevin,
that we're going to continue to hear.
Could change during the election season. It wouldn't sort of go into effect after.
Yeah, it's unclear. I mean, the intent is the folks behind this, they want to see it change in time for the November election. Is that going to happen? That's entirely unclear, but that's certainly their goal, is to try to get a change before November.
Thanks, Phil, for your question. And Kevin, let's circle back. We were talking about what potential ballot questions could happen, and you talked about changes in Maine's marijuana legislation, but there are a couple other petitions out there circulating. What else are you seeing?
Yeah, there is. So another high-profile issue that we heard a lot of debate about last year, which is transgender athletes. There is a initiative out there to try to ban transgender athletes from high school sports and sports here in Maine, kind of to follow the Trump administration's guidance on that. And then there's another that's out there that would try to create a publicly funded healthcare system, kind of a universal healthcare system here in Maine. So those are two pretty polarizing issues, two issues that have been debated for a number of years. And if they qualify for the ballot, those will be interesting to see how they turn out.
So for both of those, neither one has qualified yet, correct?
Correct.
And the transgender ballot initiative, my understanding is the petitions that are circulating would not only affect sports teams, but also bathrooms. Is that right?
Yes, I believe you're right.
Okay. So and when do we know? I don't want to put you all on the spot, but when will we know if those qualify for the petition, the ballot? Sue?
February 2nd. Is the deadline for the signatures. And from what I've heard, the folks behind the transgender athlete petition got a lot of signatures on Election Day in November. So they were already at, I think, 55,000 and they need 67,000. So I fully expect them to have the signatures they need to move forward.
Okay. We just have a few seconds left, but what strikes me, and Steve, tell me if this is right, in such a busy year, I mean, with so many candidates and so many races,
that this whole idea of name recognition may play a larger role than it would in another election. But then having said that, there's a lot of name recognition this time around. So how do you see this affecting the electorate, that there's so many names that we know, yet so many names?
Right. I think it'll be interesting, because especially in the primaries, at least in the primaries, the electorate will have a chance to rank these, you know, these folks that they know, these high profile candidates that they know about. And that's especially true in the Democratic gubernatorial primary, because so many of those candidates, I mean, Hannah Pingree, former Speaker of the House, she was part of the Mills administration, Troy Jackson, former Senate president, et cetera. There's a lot of high profile people running for the same spot. And so you'll get a chance to rank them. And the Republican side, there's lesser knowns, but you'll still have a chance to learn more about them and rank them on your ballot.
Well, thank you all so much. That was Steve Missler, Maine Public's chief political correspondent. Kevin Miller, also with us, Maine Public's State House correspondent. And Sue Cover, State House reporter and multimedia content producer for Spectrum News. We'll hear from you more this year, I hope. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy. Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.